Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Melinda was mine till the time that I found her, holding Jim and loving him.
Ben and his team at Florida DEM are fulfilling missions actively in preparation for the storm making landfall in the state of Florida. We've sent high water rescue vehicles to Hillsborough and Pinellas counties, where there are some models having the eye of the storm making landfall, although I think the more recent track is that it's slightly south of Tampa Bay. Again, a lot of uncertainty. No way you could be wedded to one particular spaghetti plot at this point.
And what he's talking about there is not that we, obviously he's not talking to us here in Escambia and Santa Rosa County, where we are on the very outskirts, even outside all of the likely effects, let alone well outside of the cone here. But he's talking to Central Florida, because here's the problem. If you've got a hurricane that goes, you know, east by northeast over the middle of Florida, where do you evacuate? As in, who evacuates? Because if you're on the north side of the path, you don't really need to evacuate much. And if you're on the south side of the path, well, do you go north or do you go south to get away? You know, because both are possible, depending on where it goes. And how far south do you have to evacuate and go north, depending on where you live? And so he's saying, just, you know, be aware that there's a lot of possibilities here. And, you know, one of the things that I really appreciated, there were kind of two notes that he was giving yesterday in his briefing, the EOC, about this Hurricane Milton. You know, it's now a Category 2. It's going to be a 3, probably a 4, and then a 3 before it makes landfall in a couple of days. But, again, over by Tampa, most likely. But he says, first of all,
now,
This is actually about debris removal. I'll come back to that in a second. The first note he said is, you don't have to wait to evacuate. You don't have to wait till, you know, Wednesday to evacuate.
If you are somebody that is in a very vulnerable part of the west coast of Florida that would be susceptible to storm surge, you know, you certainly can leave now. You don't have to wait to get an evacuation order. And I think most Floridians now at this point, particularly on the west coast, having just gone through Helene, they kind of know what parts of their county is going to be more susceptible. If you're in that, you can absolutely take off now.
Which is a good note, right? You don't have to wait until the last minute to leave. Because what happens when you wait to the last minute? Well, you and everybody else, brother. That's the problem. There are only so many roads and, you know, only so big of an interstate or two interstates, whatever the primary way is, getting north and south in Central Florida. And everybody else waits, too, because they want to find out, well, is it really them that has to get out of the way? And so Kevin Guthrie from the Department of Emergency Management, DEM director, he says, look, if your area is expecting 2 or 3 foot of storm surge, get out.
Pay attention to those storm surge watches. The governor and I have been talking about not just the cone, but we've been talking about storm surge, storm surge, storm surge. Those storm surge watches will extend hundreds of miles in each direction of that cone. If you have more than 3 feet of storm surge, I would argue if you have more than 2 feet, but we'll go with 3, you need to seriously consider evacuation. Make that decision early. Get on the road early. Nobody wants to be on I-4 or I-75 stuck in traffic. Get on the road early, evacuate early.
And it always happens. And, you know, they're really emphasizing over the last couple of years a shift in focus on what's dangerous. The shift away from the rain, although obviously North Carolina, you know, I mean, and there are, I mean, I have some stories to tell you about North Carolina too. Horrible things going on in North Carolina. Just one side note. Remember that stretch of I-40 that's west and north of Asheville between there and Tennessee and Chattanooga that we'd said is going to be closed for a year? 3 years. They've actually, in fact, I think that the last time I checked it yesterday, it was 2028. That stretch of 40 was expected to reopen. So that's not moved ahead. That's moved back significantly. And 26 north of there, not expected to open for at least a year. And there are whole parts there that are still just completely isolated. And you got like this college, Montreat, that's a little college. I actually had a close relative who went to school there, so we're paying a little more attention to that. She's not there now. But, you know, 2 out of the 3 roads are completely ripped up. They have no access to water. I mean, like, it's there are places where it's really horrible because of flooding. Now, that's not the primary thing for us in Florida, but what the governor was saying is, pay attention, because in the past we've always talked about wind, category 1, 2, 3 based on wind speed. No. Storm surge. And that's what they keep emphasizing, is that, you cannot avoid the water when it surges. That's what kills people.
I'm not saying that you should want to hunker down if there's a with major wind speeds, if we had Cat 3, Cat 4. But in Florida, a lot of the buildings can handle it, particularly new. You could potentially do that. The surge is just overwhelming. It's like trying to fight Mother Nature in a way that you're just not going to be able to win. And we saw that with Helene. Places in like Horseshoe Beach that survived with almost no damage, in Idalia, which was almost it hit Category 4, then went down to 3 before it made landfall. And then Helene wiped it out because of the surge. There was just more storm surge. And some of these places were just obliterated.
Places that can survive the 130-mile-an-hour winds are going to get destroyed by the 2-foot surge. That's the thing he's trying to teach. And look, again, this isn't going to affect us, but this is lessons learned, how to think about if, when a storm comes here, what to tell your relatives if they live in those areas and what they're trying to decide to do, right? That's kind of what I'm getting at. So that was part one, is pay attention to the surge and evacuate ahead of time. More from the governor in just a second. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
Well, no accidents to let you know about. Traffic is flowing very smoothly. I-10, I-110 are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. And meanwhile, back at home, if you're thinking about buying or selling a home and trying to decide when is the right time, if now is the right time, with the rates changing, with the market changes, with hurricanes, I mean, how does this affect the housing market? You know, there's going to be houses destroyed in Florida, have been already, and there's going to be more. What does that affect us here? You know, how does that impact the value of your home? What about insurance rates? How is this going to affect insurance and coverages? And every time there's a bad storm, and does that change the availability of insurance? Or the rules that insurers have, like those have changed in the last few years, and do you have to replace that roof before you sell that home? Is that a condition that you should accept if you're selling a home and a buyer asks for it, or a water heater, or an air conditioner, or, you know, whatever, like all of that stuff? This is why you want a good expert, a professional service expert like Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty, giving you advice when you're buying or selling a home, because they sold 175 homes last year. They know what's normal. They sold more than 122 already this year. They know what's normal, and they will help you figure all of that out and get you all the way through to the closing. 723-9158 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty. Back to the governor's advice yesterday. The first piece I was telling you about is, you know, you can leave early. Pay attention to the surge, not so much the wind speed. And by the way, we have just had Milton upgraded to a Category 3. It was upgraded to a Category 2 at 4 a.m. It's been upgraded to a Category 3 now at 6 a.m., 120 miles an hour. So rapid intensification as it is moving east right now, and then it's going to bend a little northeast and then, you know, kind of fishtail back due east, northeast when it gets to be around Tampa. Anyway, the other thing was, it how far do you have to go to get away from a storm? Well, in a way, there's a good news note about Florida. Because it's going across the middle of the state, you only have to move north or south not that far. You don't have to flee the entire cone or the hundreds of miles of effect. You just have to flee the main area of threat from surge.
We have stressed in more recent years that you don't need to get on the interstate and drive 200 miles. You don't have to outrun the storm and evacuate to where you're going to have no impacts. It is perfectly fine if you're on a barrier island to go inland. Maybe you have friends, maybe you have family, maybe you have the means to do a hotel. Maybe you go to one of the shelters when they're open. You ride out the storm and go.
But the distance to go is not really that big. Like he's, I mean, you know, and we're talking with my wife about this yesterday, because people are going to be fleeing north, and she's like, well, where are they going to go? Georgia? I mean, you know, where are they going to go? North Carolina? Like, they're probably going to come here. We're probably going to see a lot of people coming, maybe not all the way here, but, you know, Tallahassee, maybe. But they don't have, you don't have to go that far, really.
We've seen examples of a lot of people rushing the roadways. I remember in Texas 10, 15 years ago, just a major, major gridlock, and there were, it was hot. So there's you can evacuate tens of miles. It does not have to be hundreds of miles.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a lot of people that should evacuate, but they don't have to go that far. The problem is, just as a math problem, right? If X amount of people, let's say 4 million people, And we've had evacuations out of prior hurricanes that were in the 4, 5, 6, 7 million people. If 4 million people are evacuating and going north, and they are all trying to move 100 miles, okay, that's a massive problem. If 4 million people are only trying to move 20 miles, you know, it's still a problem for the roads, not nearly the scope of the problem that them all trying to move 100 miles or 200 miles would be. And so you don't have to get all the way outside of even the Vegas portion of the cone. You just have to get out of the main danger. You know, you can weather a tropical storm, right? That's kind of what he's getting at. So I appreciate that message from the governor. It's a good note, again, to keep in mind for us if we, God forbid, but, you know, these things happen, ever have to deal with that kind of stuff. The other note that came out of this press briefing yesterday was, the debris removal. Because you have a hurricane now going to basically the same place that's already been hit, but they've got all this debris on the roadside and in the yards that hasn't been picked up. What happens when you have storm surge and debris? You basically now have hydrological projectiles, which the surge is bad, but the wind picking stuff up and throwing it, like, that's a problem. So he's really worried about debris collection because a lot of places aren't working full time. Like, you know, there'll be closed debris collection sites.
But one of the things that we did was make sure that all debris, disaster debris management sites that are in landfills and counties that were impacted by Hurricane Helene, that they remain open 24/7 for drop-off. And yes, we had a situation this morning in Pinellas County, bright and early, no one was there. So we just opened it. At the state officials opened it and are using it. And we need to do that.
So this is an around-the-clock effort. And he's like, look, I know it's burdensome, but we got to get all this debris picked up. 24-hour collection, 24-hour drop-off, 24-hour receipt of the debris.
Now, this is a 24/7 moment for this debris removal. You have a storm and then have one less than 2 weeks later, two majors back to back. That is not something that is easy. That creates a lot of challenges. And so what we have to do is just do it round the clock until it's not no longer safe to do it.
Yeah, and they're going to keep working and working and forcing the private contractors who have entered into agreements to keep working and working and staying on with the whip, basically saying, you got to get this done. We can't have a second storm come in and, you know, throw all this debris around. That's got to get out of the way. Now, the other thing that's kind of interesting, Jared Perdue, the FDOT secretary, was talking about how, you know, people do die in these storms because they're driving and there's traffic and congestion and rain and wind and bad things happen. They did talk about opening the shoulders up of the roads because that is a part of the standard response plan when you're trying to get big evacuation routes out. You know, if the road is, gosh, what? It's 8 lanes, it's 4 each way, but they're also going to open up the shoulders. That makes it, you know, 10 or 12 lanes.
We always have some traffic fatalities. A lot of that is due because people wait till the very last minute to evacuate. Please leave as soon as you can. When we facilitate evacuations, we use a tool known as emergency shoulder use. We've used this for Hurricane Irma evacuations. If you remember, that was the biggest evacuation in Florida's history. We also use it for Hurricane Ian. It's very successful.
Yeah, and it's a technique they use, but they've got to prepare the shoulders to handle it. They've got to, you know, make sure that they're cleared of any debris or stalled cars, and they've got to make sure that drivers know about this too, right?
We have a partnership with Florida Highway Patrol. As soon as congestion gets to a place where travel speeds are down around 40 miles per hour, we work with the Florida Highway Patrol to open the shoulders of the interstate for travel to relieve congestion. This has been a very successful tool. We've used it for multiple storms. We are currently preparing our shoulders for that, for Hurricane Milton impact. We will be watching traffic with our regional traffic management centers. We have 10 statewide. They operate 24/7.
So obviously we need to keep our eyes on on southern central Florida, be praying for those folks, be praying that things, it's going to be bad. It's just a question of, you know, for it to be less bad than it could possibly be. And, you know, the one thing we've got going for us is that we know how to deal with storms. We've dealt with storms before. And, you know, people basically know what to do in Florida. As I say, it is not going to affect us. There's no indication that it's going to affect us. There is one sort of outside possibility that we might have tropical storm force winds tomorrow night. And so there is, I think, a chance that your school districts might close for activities tomorrow night, might possibly close for school on Wednesday. I'm not saying it is happening, and certainly they have not told us anything like this. I'm just kind of letting you know that because of the outside chance of tropical storm force winds there, you know, when that happens, that's basically what they do because of the bridges and the buses, right? And kids getting, you know, off of school and doing activities and all that kind of stuff. So just be alert, you know, kind of have your soft backup plan in case that happens tomorrow night or on Wednesday. 624 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you need hardware, you need supplies, you need advice. You know, I always talk about the hardware, of course, at Pensacola Hardware, and they have all the hardware. Whatever you need, they've got it, okay? They've been doing this for a long time, since 1851. You know, they know how to deal with renovations and remodels and problems you might have, and they, you know, they've been doing this for a long time. But also, they have the advice because that institutional knowledge. You know, a lot of times you go to, and not just picking on hardware stores, but, you know, any store these days, a lot of times you feel like, you know, roll the dice and figure out whether I know more than the person who's working there. You know, like, be honest. How often have you ever gone into a store, you ask somebody, and within 10 seconds, you're like, oh, I have made a mistake. They are going to try to help me, bless their hearts. And this is just going to waste my life away. Well, at Pensacola Hardware, no, they actually know. They actually know. And they'll give you good advice, and they'll help you, you know, they'll help you if you want to do it your way, and they'll help you if you want to do it a better way, both ways. Right downtown at 20 East Gregory Street, Pensacola Hardware, one of the oldest businesses in the country, 50 oldest in the country, oldest in the state of Florida. John Pickens has got traffic on the fives. John?
Brought to you by Knox Pest Control, their family serving your family since 1929. For information on a free pest or termite quote, you can visit knoxpest.com. Knox knocks them out. Not seeing any accidents right now to let you know about. I-10, I-110 flowing very smoothly, and not seeing any delays. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
If you're struggling with ED or your performance is down and your belly fat is growing, listen up. You've got one life. Now is the time to act.
At Wave Men's Health, we're not just healthcare. We're your secret weapon. Don't wait another day. Here's why you need to act right now.
Every moment you delay, your condition could worsen. It's not just about sex. It's about your heart, your relationship, your life.
Wave Men's Health has years of proven results for low testosterone and increasing drive, energy level, and performance. We've introduced ED and enhancement treatments so exclusive, you'll wonder why you waited.
Procrastination is the thief of time. When it comes to your sexual health, you can't afford to wait. Join the league of gentlemen who've walked out of our doors with a swagger.
Call Wave Men's Health at 850-266-7020 or visit wavemenshealth.com. Book your $99 male performance consultation now, including blood work. Call 850-266-7020 or visit wavemenshealth.com. Wave Men's Health, making it happen.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us on Friday at 9:30 with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Bands on the Beach, presented by the Santa Rosa Island Authority, tomorrow night at 7 at the Gulfside Pavilion on Pensacola Beach. Bring a blanket or lawn chair and relax. Enjoy the beautiful sunset with your favorite bands. It's the Knee Deep Band, a high-energy variety show band with something to please all ages. It's Bands on the Beach, tomorrow night at 7 with the Knee Deep Band.
Hello, my name is Ed Carson. Santa Rosa County is one of the fastest growing counties in the nation, and it's not slowing down. Our parks, roads, bridges, and other community amenities have to keep up. I'm urging you to vote yes for the penny sales tax to replace the current half cent tax. This will fund essential community improvements, enhance our quality of life, better protect our families, and improve public works. Please go to SantaRosaYes.com for more information.
Political advertisement paid for by Building Santa Rosa Tomorrow Today.
Guy Benson, keeping you informed of the news every day at 2, right after Mark Lee Van Camp and Robbins on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Get off my plane.
Take these mother humping snakes with you. Oh, that's a different movie. Okay. 629 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. That Samuel Jackson, like the non-swear version of that, is one of my all-time favorites. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
FEMA's administrator says the agency is ready for the hurricane that's expected to hit Florida here midweek. Deanne Criswell tells ABC's This Week that FEMA has been funneling resources into Florida and is already coordinating with local officials. New York City Mayor Eric Adams says New York police are out in force today. They're bracing for multiple anti-Israel protests. Today, of course, the one-year anniversary of the October 7th Hamas attacks. And a popular TikTok influencer being charged with murder and the death of a therapist in Louisiana. Terrion Thomas was arrested in Dallas last week. He's known as Mr. Prada on TikTok, apparently.
Okay. David, thanks so much for the update. Oh, I have tickets to give away. I have Ballet Pensacola Cinderella tickets, October the 11th through the 13th and the 18th through the 20th. A pair of tickets to go to the Ballet Pensacola performance of Cinderella should be fantastic. Caller number three right now, 437-1620.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. It's 1 year since the Hamas terrorist attacks in Israel.
There's still a lot of pressure on Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to reach a ceasefire deal to bring the remaining hostages home. Early this morning in Jerusalem, outside his residence, hundreds of people gathered calling for an immediate hostage and ceasefire deal. As of this morning, a full year later, 101 hostages remain in Gaza. 36 of them are confirmed to be dead.
Fox's Nate Foy in Tel Aviv as sirens warn of rockets fired from Gaza. Another storm's on the way to Florida.
Hurricane Milton is strengthening as the storm moves over the warm waters of the Gulf of Mexico, making landfall across the west coast of Florida midweek. Very heavy rain with the potential for flash flooding, storm surge along the coast, hurricane force winds, power outages, and tornadoes.
Fox meteorologist Janice Dean. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 6:31 at News Radio 92.3. It is 70 degrees right now in Pensacola. There was a big turnout over the weekend for the Soul Bowl youth football tournament over the weekend.
Soul Bowl was great because it's great being in football.
And that is Aiden Jackson. He and his mother were at the Blue Wahoo Stadium for the event. She tells Channel 3 the Soul Bowl is beneficial because it keeps young people's minds occupied with football, keeps their minds busy. That tournament in its 32nd year this year, it's for youth teams with kids ages 9 through 14. There were thousands of people at the event. It was held at Blue Wahoo Stadium on Saturday. Now, that system we've been watching in the Gulf formed into a tropical storm and then into a hurricane over the weekend. It's now a Cat 2 and rapidly intensifying. The storm is forecast to make landfall Cat 3. That thing's growing by the second. It is forecast to make landfall midweek here in central Florida. It's not expected to have any major impacts here in our area aside from some rough surf and increased risk of rip currents. West Pensacola elementary students attempting to collect 2,000 pairs of new socks to give to the homeless. The socks are among the most requested yet least donated items at homeless shelters. West Pensacola officials say the socks will be headed to Opening Doors Northwest Florida for distribution. The 2024 sock drive continues through the end of this month. House Speaker Mike Johnson says the government response to Hurricane Helene was a failure. In an interview with Fox News Sunday, the Louisiana Republican said FEMA didn't make sufficient preparations before Helene made landfall last month.
They had more than a week's notice of this, and yet we still have people who have not been served and even rescued in North Carolina. It is a heartbreaking, tragic, and infuriating situation.
And he went on to make assurances that once the full scope of the damage is known and the financial costs are calculated, Congress would allocate money to the states that need it. Over 50 counties now under a state of emergency ahead of Hurricane Milton. Governor DeSantis says the State Emergency Operations Center currently is at level one. The FDLE is performing maintenance on all their equipment deployed during Helene to make sure it's ready to use when Milton hits. And FDLE agents that were deployed to other states after Helene are now being brought back to Florida to get ready for Milton. And parts of Tampa Bay already under mandatory evacuation orders. Pinellas County issuing some orders yesterday for long-term care facilities, assisted living, and hospitals that are in three different evacuation zones. The county estimates that could impact 6,000 of their patients. It is 6:34, News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with John Pickens.
That's right. No accidents to let you know about right now. I-10, I-110 moving very, very nice and smooth. Let's see here. You're looking pretty good on the roadway. Small slowdown if you're coming from on Highway 90 from Milton over to Avalon. But other than that, traffic's looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
We are going to have plenty of sunshine today with a high near 87 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 69 degrees. For Tuesday, nice sunny skies again with a high near 85. Tuesday night, temperatures dropping near 70. We're going to be seeing more sunshine for Wednesday with a high near 82 and a low near 65. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. 70 degrees right now in Pensacola, 71 in Gulf Breeze, 70 in Milton. And your next news at 7. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. The 10-year Treasury yield jumped back above 4% this morning amid stronger labor market readings and despite the start of a Federal Reserve rate-cutting campaign last month. It is the 10-year yield's highest since early August. Goldman Sachs has lowered the odds of the U.S. slipping into a recession in the next 12 months by 5 percentage points to 15%, following the latest employment report that showed better-than-expected data. The Labor Department reported job gains increased by the most in 6 months in September, and the unemployment rate fell to 4.1%. SpaceX's Falcon 9 rocket can return to flight for a mission planned for launch today from Florida, the Federal Aviation Administration said. The Hera mission is expected to provide data for future asteroid deflection missions. Futures are moderately lower. Friday, the Dow Industrials gained 341, the NASDAQ up 219. That's Your Money Now.
If you're living with dry age-related macular degeneration or dry AMD, you may be at risk for developing geographic atrophy or GA. GA can be unpredictable and progress rapidly, leading to irreversible vision loss. Now there's something you can do to
slow it down, get it going slower.
Izervay is proven to slow GA progression.
Izervay gets GA going slower.
Izervay or avacincaptad pegol is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. Izervay can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. Izervay may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about Izervay today.
Izervay gets GA going slower.
Visit Izervay.com. That's Izervay.com.
Boogie Incorporated, the Gulf Coast leader in DJ entertainment, is celebrating their 45th year.
And they're just getting started.
If you're planning a wedding, employee party, class reunion, school dance, or an outdoor event or festival, why not use the best for less? Call Boogie Incorporated at 850-438-1660.
That's 850-438-1660.
Or go to BoogieInc.com.
Remember,
wherever Boogie goes, a party is bound to follow.
Hi, Donald Trump Jr. here. I never thought I'd see price fixing as a campaign promise. What's next? Is your 401k or IRA on the left's to-do list? This is why you need to act now and protect your nest egg. I believe gold is the answer. To find out more, get a free info kit from Birch Gold by texting the word SHELTER to the number 989898. Act now to secure your financial future. Text SHELTER to the number 989898 for your free info kit from Birch Gold.
Paid for by Birch Gold Group.
Tune in to Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sundays at 1 with Paul Roberts. Find out how their certified advisors can help you enjoy your retirement income. Financial security is about more than investments. Roberts Wealth can help you live your values and trust your future planning every step of the way. Don't miss Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, this Sunday at 1 p.m.
Investment advisory services offered by Foundations Investment Advisor Services, LLC, SEC. Registered advisors.
Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic, but don't have a radio nearby? Then you need to download our new app. With the News Radio Pensacola app, you can get text alerts for breaking news, severe weather, and traffic delays. Plus, customize your alerts so you only get the information you need. It's easy to sign up for text alerts. Just download our app, create an account, and select the alerts you want to receive. You can even change your settings at any time. So what are you waiting for? Download the News Radio Pensacola app today and start getting text alerts.
She wanted for intro music, and she said something upbeat and fun, and I was trying to think of something that would be in her sweet spot for her age, and I stumbled upon the Beyonce. So if Who Run the World Girls for the first female commissioner that's going to be the county commissioner in a long time, if you don't like that choice, it's all on me. Ashley Hoffberger, who is now the, I don't know what the official title here is, but county commissioner select appointee, because she's not yet, but she will be later today. Welcome to the welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Okay with the Beyonce?
Yeah, that works. Well, it's upbeat. It's happy. It checks the boxes. Thank you.
Outstanding. Okay, so just let's talk a little bit about the mechanics. You're not the county commissioner yet, but you will be later today. Do we know what time that's going to happen?
Correct. We don't. So by the time the announcement came down on Friday, everyone had already left. So we didn't know what the judges' schedules looked like. So we're going to have to wait until this morning, until those dockets come out, to see who we can get to do the swearing in.
Okay, because it takes a judge to do it officially, and then you'll be an actual county commissioner. But as I understand it,
correct,
am I right about this, that like Sunshine already applies to you because you know you're going to be? Because I think if you win an election, even though you're not in office, it applies. Do I have that right, as far as you know?
Yes, so Sunshine kicked in Friday as soon as I found out.
Right. So no talking to the other commissioners offline. Your text, your emails, all the fun stuff that comes with being in Sunshine suddenly applies to you, right?
Correct. Yeah. So if you don't want it on a billboard, don't say it. Don't text it. Don't put it in an email.
That's exactly right. So I am curious kind of how we got here. How far ahead of the announcement did you know that the governor was going to appoint you?
So 30 minutes, maybe.
Oh, wow.
I know I talked to the governor's office and they, you know, confirmed a few things in my bio and said, okay, great, we're going to be doing a press release in about a half an hour. Obviously, I think there were some people who already knew. And so some of that had already went out to a few of the media outlets, because I was getting text messages like, hey, congratulations. I'm like, congratulations on what? So it was very exciting and very surprising Friday afternoon.
It's always good to be the last to know when it totally affects all of your life, right?
Right. Nothing like throwing a party you didn't know about.
Right. Now, I was personally kind of surprised by the timing, and I want to talk about that a little bit. And you may not know anything, and that's fine, but I had been of the opinion, of course, I've been screaming for us to get a county commissioner for District 4 since Robert Bender got pushed over to the Supervisor of Elections office in January. I mean, 10 months is a long time. I understood at a certain point that the governor wasn't going to get involved in it because it would look political to pick among the Republican alternatives. But I actually thought that after the primary, that he would nominate you or appoint you to fill out the term. And then, of course, you have an election still to win against Ron Helms in November. Were you surprised by the timing? Did you have any ongoing communication with the governor about whether you would get appointed? Is there anything like that that would help us understand this particular choice of timing?
No, I'm a little surprised as well. Very thankful, but I thought it would have came right after the primary. So I was kind of expecting something within, you know, the first 2 weeks after the primaries. And then when we didn't hear anything, I thought, okay, so we're really just going to run straight through to November. And then Friday afternoon arrived, and here we are. So I had no prior communication, didn't know anything was coming down the pipeline. So just as surprised as everyone else. But I think it's really good timing as well. There's a lot of really important things coming up. Like you mentioned, District 4 hasn't had representation since February. So it is good timing, and I'm thankful to be in this position and really hit the ground running.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, this is one of the things that has been so frustrating because, you know, the governor's office has been very slow to make appointments. We had, of course, an ECUA vacancy a couple of years ago that was vacant for 10 or 11 months because it just, you know, like, they need representation, and especially when we have, you know, district, not countywide elections. The people of District 4, it's not that the county wasn't serving them, but it's different. I mean, if it weren't different, we wouldn't need representative government, right? So having the person they can call who is accountable to them and responsive to them, you know, regardless of whether you win in November, just having a person to fill out that seat is, I think, very essential. So that's a good news note. Several things I want to ask you. You actually hinted at it, and that's one of the things I want to bring up. I think there's been a lot of speculation about why the governor made the selection a month before the election. And one of the most common speculations is that there are a lot of votes, and this board seems to be eager to rush into making massive decisions right before the bell, right before the curtain falls on Jeff Burgosh. Possibly, of course, a change of seats coming District 5 with Stephen Berry. Who knows how that election is going to go? And I wanted to ask you your opinion about some of those issues and your sort of interest in seeing decisions made right away. We're talking to Ashley Hoffberger, the Escambia County Commissioner appointee for District 4. She will be later on today. Hang on for just a second, Ashley. John Pickens has got traffic on the fives.
That's right. I-10 rolling smoothly this morning. I'm not seeing any delays. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. Back to Ashley Hoffberger. So, Ashley, the first kind of, like, I don't know, 10,000-foot question is, how do you view your role coming into this board as the appointee for the next month, month and a half, until, if you win the election, you would be the elected official?
Right. Great question. So the most important thing is making sure that I am working with other county commissioners to continue to move the community forward. There's quite a few things that are up for vote or we're in the process of negotiating, and I think it's really important that District 4 has a say in those things. There are some items that I ran on that I want to go on and get the ball rolling, you know, more resources for our first responders. Some of the things going on with EMS, I want to go on and start looking at that. And then just making sure that we are spending the money that we receive from the constituents in a responsible way. So all of those things, whether I'm elected in November or not, those things need to happen. So I'm comfortable starting that now.
Let's kind of work on that premise, because it's hard to imagine, you know, in a heavily Republican district with you and Ron Helms that you wouldn't win in November. But of course, anything can happen. But let's work on the premise that you're going to be the elected, you know, the elected official. So this is a 4 and a month or two term for you, not just a, you know, couple of month term. The one big vote that's going to maybe come up is the possibility of a $90 million sports complex along with the Bay Center. But encumbering that fifth cent for the next 30 years in a bond issue for $90 million, do you think that's a vote that should take place before the new board gets installed? Or is that a vote that should wait until after Steve Stroberger replaces Jeff Burgosh and whatever is going to happen in District 5 takes place? And District 4, frankly.
I would like to... Right. There's a lot of moving parts there, and we're looking at a huge changeover on the board, probably one of the biggest changeovers we've seen in a really long time. I think the responsible decision would be to wait until you have those new board members up and that they can all weigh in. I mean, you had people who chose to elect someone else to represent them and to make a decision that's going to wrap up so much money. I mean, honestly, I'll have grandkids by the time that thing's paid off. My little girl's 3 years old. So I think we need to wait until everyone has representation and those seats at the table have their voices heard. And I think that would be the most responsible thing to do. And I think most of the citizens would agree with that.
And I'm guessing, but this is why I want to ask, do you take the same opinion of the prospect of an OLF 8 contract coming forward? Because there's been a lot of very sudden eagerness, it seems, by particularly Stephen Berry and Lumen May to get something. It looks to all of us who are watching as if they are suddenly willing and eager to get something done before the curtain falls. And then lo and behold, here you are on the board. Do you also feel like OLF 8 is something that should wait until after the new board is installed?
So for OLF 8, I mean, that's been lingering for years. So that one's not a surprise. I feel like the sports complex just kind of came out of nowhere. We had a lot of people that were surprised or didn't know about it, and there was a lot of workings kind of in the background, and that really just came to the forefront of the public here recently. With Outlying Field, I mean, we've been working on that for years. There's been things on the table for months, and we're in the process of negotiating through those things. At the last meeting, they decided to move forward with selling the property as a whole, which I think is the best bet for the county. I mean, the Board of County Commissioners, we're not developers. We're not, you know, we're not contractors. We really need to be selling that piece of property to somebody that can manage all aspects of it. So I'm comfortable moving forward with the negotiations on that. Just the way commercial negotiations work, I would be absolutely shocked if there's a vote that goes into play before the new county commissioners are actually sworn in.
Well, your level of shock may be a little bit higher than mine, because I hate to be the pessimist about this board, but I see a 3-vote block that seems to be willing to try to do as much as possible before their power goes away. And so I actually am concerned, especially with Fred Hemmer's group. Not that they have to be the one to develop it, but it seems like the shifting terrain about, as you say, whether it's going to be the whole field or whether it's going to be part of the field, whether Escambia is going to retain a part of it or not. All of this seems to suddenly be in flux. And I guess my one request, if I'm a citizen asking you, is I would love to be sure that anybody who is willing to meet the new terms is given a chance to do so before any kind of a final decision is made. I can't imagine all of that process getting resolved before the new board gets in place. Do you kind of, that's kind of sounds like that's what you're saying, but I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Well, and I know, so at the last county commissioner meeting, there was a group that came forward and they actually put in an offer on the whole thing. And so that was being evaluated. And then I believe it was Stephen Berry that said, hey, we need to make sure that we've reached out to people who have given us prior offers and make sure we've kind of more or less changed the terms, right? Like we're playing a different game at this point. It's for the whole piece of property. So I do know that that was highlighted. I will say we need to confirm and make sure that those people were reached out to and let them know, like, hey, this is the new situation that we're looking at.
Right. And if there's, look, if there's a good offer, there's a good offer. But I particularly know there's been a dragging of the feet on Fred Hemmer and, you know, it feels very much to me like personal favoritism to pick the one suddenly over the other one that's been working on this for more than a year. I'm just, you know, hoping that we get everybody who is willing a fair consideration, especially because, as you know, we all know the board composition is going
to
change.
Well, and I think what we need to do, so for me, the priority for that is, are we creating jobs? Is it the best use of the property? And is it going to provide an asset to the community? And so if you can say yes to all of those things, I think it makes sense to move forward in negotiating with that company or that team or whoever put that offer forward. But you're right. We need to give people the opportunity to bid on it and make sure that they're aware of the full situation.
You know, one of the things that obviously, because, as you said, big shifts on the board, there's going to be a relatively predictable 2-vote block with Mike Kohler and Steve Stroberger. At least that's the expectation. Whether if Stephen Berry wins, then Stephen and Luman always vote together. And so that wouldn't be a surprise. If Stephen loses, then you now have a third, you know, vote in Josh Roberson, who's a who knows what. But if it's a 2-versus-2, suddenly Ashley Stroberger looks like the tiebreaker on a lot of things. How are you thinking about that power?
It's interesting, and I mean, it's exciting, but when I ran, I said, we're going to do what's best for the community, and I'm not going to do the whole team situation. And, you know, when I've sat down and I've talked with the other county commissioners, because prior to Friday, I could do that, it right. was, I believe we should be able to vote for what we believe is best. We should be able to give a clear and reasonable and respectable explanation of that and vote. And maybe I vote with you, maybe I vote against you, and then the next vote needs to be independent of that. There's 5 of us. We're never going to agree on everything, but we should respect where each other's coming from, and there should be a clear reason on why.
One thing that has been a sort of a persistent question in front of the, not really in front of the board, but the constituents have been bringing it up a lot, is the Finley JoJo and the development in that area. And I got to believe those people feel a great relief that they finally have a District 4 person to speak for them. Do you have an opinion about that project in that area, or are you still learning? Where are you at on that?
Yeah, so essentially it's about 22 acres between Finley and JoJo Drive. If you're not familiar with that, where that is, it's near Olive Road University area, and it backs up to Governor's Gate apartment complex. So there's been some proposed development that has been not been moved forward. And it is the reason that it doesn't really fit into the surrounding community. All of the proposed plans that have been sent out so far have been from third-party individuals, i.e. there's someone who owns that piece of property, those people want to come in and buy it and develop it. So the actual owner of the property has not submitted any plans yet. I have spoke with him, and he wants to make sure that whatever goes in there is an asset and an amenity to the community, and it's something that really does fit in with the surrounding area. So I think that there's room for middle ground. The fact that there's 22 acres in the middle of town, and we talk about urban infill, and we talk about making housing attainable. The only way to make housing attainable is to put more housing on the market. So I think everyone is in agreement. Hey, we're going to put houses on those 22 acres. The question is, what does that look like, and how do you make that fit in with the current community?
I hope that the people who live there find that reassuring, that you've already been speaking with them, and you know that those are the kind of assurances we're looking for. So that sounds like basically good news. Last thing I want to ask you, maybe it's the most obvious question of all, but I did save it for last. You're the first woman on the Escambia County Commission board for a long time. I was trying to think of, who is the most recent one. But is that important to you? Is that relevant to you? Is there any element of your approach to the board that's going to affect? How are you thinking about that the first female commissioner in a long time?
I mean, it's definitely exciting. And I think anytime we talk about diversity in a situation, it needs to be diversity in thought, not necessarily diversity in appearance or gender. Coming from a female perspective, I do believe we approach things in a little bit different way. So I think that anytime that you can have a different outlook on something or a different approach, and that brings some much needed diversity to a team, that's a benefit, right? So I think it is really, really exciting. I think it does set a great example for younger females in the community that are wanting to step up and maybe don't know how or haven't seen a path before. So that's exciting too. So I won't say that it is the top reason to vote for someone, but it is definitely something to consider. Like, hey, do we have somebody that thinks this way on our board, and would that be an asset to the team? So that part is really neat to take a step back and look at.
Well, we do have a history of extraordinarily capable and competent female commissioners in Escambia County, even though there have not been that many of them. The ones we've had have been very good. I hope you fit into that mold, and I certainly expect that you will. Congratulations on the appointment. We look forward to the swearing in later today. Obviously, the election upcoming in about a month, and that still has to be decided. But Ashley Hoffberger, the brand new county commissioner as of later today. Thank you for the time, and again, congratulations.
Absolutely. Thank you. Have a great day.
You bet. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
Right now, we're seeing a disabled vehicle with roadblock on Highway 29 and Detroit Boulevard. If you're going southbound, blocked at this time at Detroit Boulevard, so just be aware of that. Other than that, traffic looks good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Hey, Pensacola, Dave Ramsey here. Trust your vehicle to the best auto service center in Pensacola, Bobby Likas Auto Service. For years, you've relied on Bobby Likas Auto Service on Davis Highway for maintenance and repairs, and now you have a choice. Keep taking your vehicle to the Davis Highway shop or go to their new location on Pensacola Boulevard. That's right, Bobby Likas Auto Service now has a second location at 8969 Pensacola Boulevard, right across from the Super Walmart. So keep your vehicles running smooth with their maintenance service program, and when your car or truck needs repairs, big or small, bring it to either location. Engine repairs, brake work, transmissions, air conditioning, power steering, and more. They can take care of it. Keep your vehicle on the road with the help of Bobby Likas Auto Service on Davis Highway and also on Pensacola Boulevard. And don't forget to tell them Dave Ramsey said hey.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Breer, candidate for Pensacola City Council, District 1. It is past time that the citizens of District 1 have a representative who will listen, respond, and proactively represent our concerns at City Hall, not just special interests. I'm a fierce advocate for our community and being fiscally responsible with taxpayers' money, and it's always taxpayers' money. Please vote for me, Jennifer Breer, on November 3rd, and let your voice be heard. Paid for and approved by Jennifer Breer for Pensacola City Council, District 1.
When you listen to News Radio 92.3 on Sundays, you get Christian Outlook at 7, Ask the Preacher at 8, Town Hall Review, Fox News Sundays, The Weekend, Tech It Out, and Gun Talk at 8.
Farfetch'd, it's what makes a car a Volkswagen.
Was the last time you heard that word? 6:59 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. David Wayne is in the newsroom with a headline or two for us. David?
Well, Hurricane Milton, now a Category 3 storm, and making its way towards landfall midweek. Another 500 active duty troops heading to western North Carolina to assist with search and recovery efforts after Hurricane Helene.